I'm going to go to the next one. which does indicate their recommendations as they reviewed them with Oak City. This is to work, the RPG intends to work with Oak City on this one, and of the CID dollars to compile and prioritize a series of things which would include culinary water waters from drainage, irrigation, power streets, recreation, etc. Again, this is one that has the RPG plan and the culture of 3.1-3.8. The second application is from Town of Dower for a transportation master plan. They're asking from this board $30,500 grant. They do have a matching applicant cash amount of $30,500. Page 3-2-3, there are RPG comments which suggest updating the general plan and municipal code to better quantify the transportation plan. The public hearing in this report packet from February 3rd, 2015. Discussing the project, question would be, is the transportation plan a priority? It also, this application also has the regional planners combination of this folder. And on yellow, 3-2-3. The town of Joseph is what I discussed, which they requested to be placed on the pending list. They're not quite ready for review by the board. They will come in at a later date when the board discusses them and then we put them on the agenda in the future. They are asking for a 40,000 grant. The money would, their matching funds was a request to the Division of Drinking Water, which doesn't need to be so. The middle of this month, so they're really not quite ready to quantify their matching cash. Number 4 is Grand County Municipal Building Authority, and they're requesting a jail and dispatch remodel of their existing facility. The total amount they're asking for is $4,780,000. That consists of a $2,280,000 20-year 0% loan, and a $2,500,000 grant. This applicant does have $400,000 in cash, they are also contributing to the project. This is to remodel the 1992 building. There isn't any new construction, only remodel. There is a question, they will have to displace all the inmates. Can they afford that? The original cost indicated on the estimate included in the application was $4 to $4.5 million. The request now has an increase of $544,000, so that would be a question that I would ask for Grand County. Number 5, Town of Hatch, utility and drainage study grounds proceedings. This is for a $25,000 grant from CIA, and the matching cash will come from the Division of Drinking Water. The question the board should ask is the status of that. They should coordinate with the regional planning person in their area. I think that they have. Also, in the red folder is the RPP review. 3-5-3A is the number we will be covering now. The May 27, 2015 public hearing states that this is to update the town's master plan. What exactly will this plan be discussed? That's a great question that the board should ask. Number 6, Beaver County Fire Special Service District. It is not for a recreation facility, which is, anyway, it is for a new fire pumper truck. $120,000 in applicant cash is included in this as their contribution. They're asking for a total request of $407,000. Consisting of $207,000 0% loan and $200,000 grant. Currently they own 3 trucks. The newest one, they got 1975 truck new. The other 2 trucks they own, they acquired in 1982 and 1984 from Torrance, California. They were used at that time. This is to replace that 40-year-old 1975 engine. They state that they did investigate alternate funding, And on page 3-6-11, it's on the financial information. They do say that without sharing funding, this probably won't be possible. Project number 7, Springdale, which is Transportation Master Plan. They do have the matching cash of $15,000 from the applicant. They're asking for $15,000 grant from CID. They're initiating the Transportation Master Plan, but there's an RPG review on 3.7-3. The applicant was initiating transportation plan. They increased the scope of this plan. What is the scope now? So we would be a question that the board should ask. This includes pedestrian crossings, cell stops, et cetera, which is important. You know, which brings down the evidence down there and right at the mountain side and standing, and then you get a lot of heaven fall traffic. The RPC comments are also in red folder on this one, 3-7-3. The minutes in this application were the council meeting. Would ask to see that because it was just actually a public query. Number 8, town of Torrey, property purchase. This is for land and buildings. There are pictures in the application. Concerning this project, it's for a $395,000 grant. Land is next to the town hall and park that is just right now. It's 2.63 acres. It includes a house, two commercial buildings, and two building lots. In the minutes, page 3-8-16, it indicates that possible cash available to assist with this, but they're asking right now for all of it from CID. There's a good description on the property here on that page. The pictures again are on 3-8-14 and 3-8-15. They are all including the property they are intent on demolishing any of those buildings at this time. Application number 9 is from the town of Pitnall, purchase equipment, and then the excavator and trailer. They're asking all of the cost of this piece of equipment from CID, $50,000 grant. The town has always been over that hole. The town rents a mini backhoe on occasion when they need to do the smaller jobs, and it costs about $200 an hour. This will save rental costs, according to the applicant. On 3-9-12, you see the specs for the box that. On 3-9-13, you expect to trade. I appreciate the application of discussing the public hearing, though no public was in attendance for the RPC. Project number 10, Morgan County Road Improvement. The applicant does will be contributing $200,000 in applicant cash. They're asking for $200,000 in the end. The CID has funded other projects in Morgan County, but they're not directly to Morgan County. 3-10-12 indicates the cost breakout, and there's a map on 3-10-13 which indicates location for the project. The question the board should have is that the grant would be cash, and again, the road addendum for this project was in the red folder. The next project for discussion at this meeting is a request for special consideration. Fish County Infrastructure Coalition is for an electric power line, booklet, electrical transmission line. They're asking for $1,350,000 total, $890,030 year 2.5% loan funding, and $460,000 grant. And they do have other cash, $450,000, indicated on the application. This particular line will be located in Duchesne County. It's in Uinta County. Who will be the beneficiary? The question that would be asked. CID is always doing projects that are devoted to a public purpose and then this is a substantial stimulus to the public provided by the facility. I believe, you know, all of these are good projects. I turn the time over to the chairman to discuss how many board member issues there are as we're going to be.
Thank you, Kim. I appreciate the work you and your staff do. Well, good morning, everyone. Again, welcome. We're happy to be here with us. As you hear, we have a full agenda. Should be interesting and exciting. Let's start off with board and staff introductions, and we'll begin with Gail on the round.
Gail Gardner, staff to the board.
I'm Tom Roberts, the Attorney General's Office, staff to the board.
Bruce Adams, San Luis County Commissioner, representing Southeastern Utah AMG.
Steve Carroll, Wallace County Councilman, representing the local commissioners.
Good morning. My name is Martin Keever, County Commissioner, representing Lander County.
Bobby Jarrett, County Commissioner, representing Sixth County AMG.
Richard Allen, State Treasurer.
Steve Carroll.
Ken Carroll, staff to the board.
Tom Coley, Director of Housing and Community Development.
Jay Bonner, Carver County Commissioner, representing Carver County.
I'm David Nadeau from St. Joe, representing the Utah Commission.
Jim Matson from King County Commission and representing the Five County Association of Governments.
Carl Harrison, Michigan County Commissioner and representing the AMG.
Greg Lucky, representing Water Quality Board.
Shannon, why don't we go to you and the Water Report?
Shannon Elbert, the Rural Senator.
Shannon, what's your staff to the board?
Brenda Brown, Financial Staff to the board.
Good.
Good evening, Staff to the board.
And Kimberly.
Kimberly Schmeling, here at Financial Support Division, County Community Development.
Thank you very much. We'll turn our attention to the minutes, which are included in your packet, and the chair will entertain a motion to approve for correction that is necessary.
I'll move correct. I'll move the minutes.
I need your correction.
I will vote that one needed.
Page 2-1-3, from Central Valley Town, talked about 2,460 miles there in the second line. The town, state, and our neighboring states also. So we can correct that to whatever is linear feed or, you know, well, whatever I'm okay with, but just a small.
You haven't heard about the Central Valley Town expansion, have you?
I did hear about the expansion, no.
Thank you for that correction, too.
That is second.
We have a motion in a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much. Our first project is the Post City. We invite them to come forward. As you read, those of you who are here, introduce yourself for the record and then tell us about the project.
I'm Ken Christensen, Mayor of Long Beach.
Craig Dutson, City Councilman.
Ryan Jolly, Jones Civil Engineering.
Our project, as it was described, is simply to update a general plan. It's been a number of years since that general plan was looked at. And we just thought it was important that we take time to set us up for the next 20 years or so in the direction we want to go as a city. We've been working with the Rural Planning Group. We're excited to continue that work with them. We also have asked Jones of the Mill if they would help us on some of the planning. And that's the direction we're going.
I think we appreciate that brief overview. Any questions from the board?
I guess anybody that walks out of the planning study today be prepared for this question, but as I read the summary from our rural planning group, who mentioned it on this one, but on all the others, they raised the question about, didn't you need to go out competitively bid the project on this, or bid the engineering or planning services? And so I asked the question, you, Mayor, did you follow state law procurement and go out and do an RFQ for services on this project?
We did with the plan section. The reason we chose Jones and DeMille, we had been involved in our project from our fire years ago. They've been the engineers that have worked with that. They understand our community. They know exactly what we have and where we are. and what the amount was asked, and we just asked that they would be the ones that would help us with that.
You didn't do anything?
We didn't send a bid out for the... No.
Well, you're going to find the same offer?
Yeah. With our amount we're asking to this point.
Any other questions from the board?
The general plan update?
Yes.
It was in 2000.
And how long have you been there?
A year and a half.
Do you mind not using the current plan?
Well, we have referenced that. Things have changed drastically since that plan. Based upon what the plan was shared there on past history, things have changed considerably since then. So we tried to go off that, and it is getting quite outdated quickly. And we just thought it was time to catch back up with where we want to go as a community based upon current growth and things of that nature.
If there are any further questions, is there anything else?
I'll move that we approve $12,500 in grant.
Thank you. And so far it's working well, and I think it's going to be a good partnership, so I'm excited about it. So, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ben Nauer. I'm the Public Works Director for Ballard City. Mike Hawley, representing Jones and the Mill.
Your name, sir?
Mike Hawley, for Jones and the Mill, yeah.
I thought
you called
Mike Hawley.
Yeah, Mike Hawley.
Mike Hawley, sorry.
Michael Hawley.
Michael.
Ben's asked me to give a little, present the request to the board. Basically, Ballard's never had a transportation master plan. They're seeing rapid growth, much of it related to energy development in the basin. Over the last 4 years, Ballard's grown 25%. In 2014, it was 10% growth. So it's been a rapid increase all at once, which has brought the need for it to do some transportation planning, identify where their corridors need to be preserved, and also assess the current infrastructure so that as these requests for development come in, they can know whether or not their current infrastructure, their current roadways are adequate for the type of development that is occurring. So that, and in as well as a the other items that are in the application, there was as part of the transportation master plan, we were identifying a transportation improvement plan over the next few years where Ballard can improve their infrastructure and the transportation system, as well as a pavement preservation plan that will be all part of this plan. So,
pavement preservation sounds very
green. Yeah, right.
Any questions from the board?
I promise I'd ask every one of you this, because if you go through a procurement process, do you select your engineering firm?
No, sir, not as of yet. He's helping us with the funding, but we have not done the request for engineering for the study yet. No, sir.
So is only talking on the funding part?
Yes, sir.
No, 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 just preparing a funding application.
Preparing a funding application.
Yeah. We, their plan is to go out to RSU.
There's a comment in here also about there might be good to update your general plan, which seems to make sense if we're going to talk about transportation. We don't build a big road or decide we're going to make land use differently. Have you considered working with our rural plan group and sort of general plan update in conjunction with it?
Not as of yet, no, sir, but we did our last update in 2010 for our general plan, and that is, I guess, in consideration, but it was not included in this, no, sir.
Something you have to consider?
Yes.
Would it be helpful in this overall funding process? I mean, it's something you wouldn't cost too much, I don't think, as a key.
It depends on how bad it was done in 2010.
Other questions from the board? Commissioner Heath, I have a few questions for you. We have a motion from Commissioner McKee. We have a second.
Second.
We have a second by Commissioner Mattson. Any further questions or
questions? I have some additional questions. Sorry. So it looks like there's basically one main road through there and he needs $50,000 for transportation. Study that. Can you tell me? I don't understand how he needs $50,000 for his other planning things like other roads, water, secondary water for, you know, top pen drive.
Yeah, I put together the cost for that. There's several items that we're looking for or looking at in this transportation master plan. As I mentioned previously, the main corridor through there is Highway 40, which is a state road, which is not part of Ballard's owned infrastructure. But they do have other roads, other infrastructure off of Highway 40. I think this year alone we've had half a dozen or so subdivision requests, applications come in off of Highway 40 on the other roads that are belonging to Ballard that we've helped review. But many of these, there's no current transportation master plan to compare these to. So we're doing, to make sure that we're not building houses where there needs to be a road, I guess is what the request is. But basically the plan has several elements to it. It's not only planning, but it's going and coring existing pavements, identifying thicknesses, base, asphalt thicknesses, so we can know what the current infrastructure is before the developments happen. There's the transportation access management policies for Ballard. They've never had a transportation plan before, so preparing these policies and reviewing it with Ballard and getting those in place so they have something to fall back on as these developments come in and requests come in. I mentioned the pavement preservation plan, the transportation improvement plan for the major projects. So there's several elements of it, and when we put a pencil to it, that's where it
goes. So when they come in, when you identify road improvements, your engineering and other projects, a lot of it have already been done. So if you just in there and they come in for their road improvements?
Well, the preparation of any plans, engineering plans, would be done with this for the major projects.
Identify the corridors
and things like that would be identified. Right, any coring and sampling of the existing pavement would already be done.
I just have one question that
I
think about. Going off to the Valley, the fourth issue between the county and the city.
Yes, it is. Actually, this plan will be presented to Roosevelt City to correlate with their master plan and also with UNA County and their transportation plan so that we can be involved in their special service district. So we can, I guess, more working together and then against each other instead of against each other.
Yeah, I just want to see that as a funding plan.
And you don't see other player there too.
Yes.
We'll be coordinated with the highway corps.
No, because we had looked at where we were doing 50% out of pocket. We felt that was as much as we could spend, and in the past we have decided, let's approach this board to help us move forward with this project. So, no, sir, we have not.
And your source of cash, $30,500, is all of it is secured, available?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It has been in our budget. I'm sorry, I was not at that meeting. I could not answer that. I apologize for that.
Would you please, when you return to the office, provide Ms. Powers with an answer to that question?
Yes.
If there's no further discussion, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Just regarding comments, most of the grants we received about $70,000 from the competitive bid. And looking at doing some general plan update, I'm sure it's going to be 5 years as well, so
yes.
Probably do it for the general plan before we get done, and then we'll read the concrete report that we're going to send it
to them. Okay.
And see you on the air, we're going to do it with you.
Will do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
With a request to put the challenge deliver on the pending list for Sherwin and Wilson. Carol with the motion, and Mr. Zanardi with the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? I'm sure we can place on the pending list. Grand County Municipal Building Authority.
Good morning. I'm Elizabeth Chubbs. I'm the Grand County Council Chair, and we have a whole group of people here with us, so I'd like to do some brief introductions. Next to me is Sheriff Steve White. We also have Lieutenant Veronica Bullock, who's our jail commander, with us. Lynn Jackson, who's on our county council, a member. Diana Carroll is with us. She's a Grand County Clerk Auditor. Ruth Dillon is with us. She is the council administrator. Rick Bailey is with us, our emergency manager. We also have Ralph Stanislaw. He is the architect with Architect Group. Alex Buxton is with us, financial advisor, Zions Public Finance. And we have a member of the Department of Corrections, James Shipp. So we have a lot of people. Okay, and with that is all I'm going to say. I'm going to turn it over to Sheriff White.
I'd like to just kind of give you a background of why this project is where it is and what's come to pass. Our jail was constructed 20 years ago, and when it started into the initial construction phase, the funding was not complete, but the building was cut in half. The plans were never redesigned for half the building. And so as that has went on over the years, we found a lot of flaws in the buildings. We found a lot of things that have not been able, that were not built up to code or to spec as things have went. This last year, we conducted a capital facilities plan that identified the long-term needs for the sheriff's office. This study is included in the application. This remodel does not meet all of our needs, but with the current crisis of coming on the road with some public safety issues and some security issues in the jail, that's why we're here, because we feel like we need to push this as quickly as we can. Basically, what we're going to be looking at is remodeling is the infrastructure of the jail, which will be, you know, the electrical, security, dispatch, control, the plumbing,
Let me give you a few examples of some of the issues that we've had. With our electrical, we had a maintenance crew in working. They were working on a couple of the call boxes, and they struck a wire wrong, which every lock in the jail popped, which was some major security issues. Another background issue that is very scary to me is when we say our control room and our dispatch are the same room. So our dispatchers control the jail. We've had several water leaks into the jail or into the control room, which is also our dispatch, which is our 911 center where we dispatch for the entire county. We've had water drip running onto the computers. We've been lucky that we haven't electrocuted somebody, and as of about a month ago, we had a certain storm that took things down, and it took everything down. Grand County was radioless. 911 was down for about 15 minutes because our backup generators did not come on. We've received some letters. We house state inmates. We've received some letters from the state with some concerns about the physical security of our building. The state has been great to work with us. That's why James Chip is here. If you guys need to answer any questions or anything, he'll be more than happy to. Our staffing and our policies are up to date, but our building is not. It's caused them some concerns with staff safety, building safety for their inmates as well as ours, and we would really like to try to get those addressed. An example of what that is we have some isolation cells that are supposed to be positive pressure. They're negative pressure. They pulled bad air in instead of pushing the bad air out. So that needs to be done. Issues in the kitchen, some of them we've tried to start addressing with deep freezes, and some of that issues we've tried to already start fixing. But it's room, or it takes more than what we have at this point. I know Candace brought up the fact that we're going to have to move our inmates out. While this is going on, we're figuring the 8 to 10 months, we're giving us a year just to make sure that we get it right. We're in talks with Emory County to house our inmates. I don't have the final numbers yet, but they're willing to just open a tier to us, and then we will provide the staffing for that tier, which will keep our costs to a minimum other than the transportation costs. So that'll be a huge bonus to us. It'll be an expense for us to house to keep staff up there, but it's going to be way cheaper in the long run than having to have just pay the full cost of housing our inmates. So Emory County has been great to work with us on that issue. The other thing we're going to try to do while this is going on, we will try to work with the judges on booking releases, those kind of things, to try to hold our costs down where we can there, but sometimes people just have to go to jail. So, and then we'll be able to use part of our correction staff to do the transports and those kind of things, which will help hold our costs down. But our dispatch will also have to be moved out while this is going on to the temporary site to keep our 911.
Sure, how many inmates do you have?
Right now I think we're at about 24, 25. I can hold 68. That's the other thing too, is our maintenance costs for a jail of 64, we're costing us $60,000 to $80,000 a year in maintenance for a very small jail. And that just don't feel like we're doing a taxpayer service. We're spending a lot of money, we're putting a lot of band-aids on a lot of stuff.
Is there anything on the downside?
Right now, the thing about it is we've been at max capacity before. It rolls up and down. Then, as soon as I say that, we'll be maxed out. It's more out. We've got to kind of have a tourist thing working in there. Yeah.
Any questions from the board?
It is, and they redid the drains on, and we actually flooded our computer room right after they did it, so we've had some other issues that we're still trying to address and get fixed.
Is Hogan a specific jail or this kind of facility
There's you try to get people that have built jails before, mm-hmm. for the sheer fact of that reason, because there's a lot of complexities. And there's the Utah jail standards, the Department of Corrections jail standards, mm-hmm. then there's a set of national standards also. Yeah, it was remodeled and it was 20 years ago, in 92, I believe it was. It was a little over 20 years.
And this issue existed at the time that somebody expected it and
found it? Well, it's gotten worse over the years. When they redid the jail 20 years ago, like I say, it was cut in half. And a lot of the locking systems and stuff were, when they purchased them, they were outdated systems, so they got a heck of a deal on them. So anytime, like right now, I have to have locks custom made, because they're not a standard system. They're out of date, and nobody will make them. Yeah, so that's what we've dealt with. It's just been a progressively worse issue over the years.
Have you lost any maintenance to these shortages and go open by
itself? No, we have not. When the jail originally opened, I believe we had 3 escapes, and one of them actually dropped onto my desk at the time. Because when the plans were re-engineered, there was safety walls that were not put into place. And then luckily over the years, that was before I was sheriff. But then we've been able to come back in and at least relook at things and try to get some of that stuff filled up. So we're just trying to, like I say, it's trying to make things the best we can with the situation that we have. A lot of this though, when they did the inspections, you wouldn't notice them. It was a lot of it was hidden stuff, and at the time the locks and stuff have been working. We've been trying to keep things up to date as best we can and keep them working, but it's just getting to the point now where it's too expensive to do it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner
Mayor,
did you have a question?
I did. Two questions. One, in the NSX, it was proposed that this public hearing that this is only going to cost the maximum of $4.5 million, and then the application is 5.1.
At the time when that was originally done, the transportation costs and stuff had not been added in for the moving of the inmates and some of that kind of things. And then plus the fact of with the remodel, you just didn't know. When we break into it, we're not for sure 100% of what we're going to get. You know, we tried to be the best we can and do the best homework we can. And then, what was the other, do you remember what any of the other costs were that when that came up, Rick? The transportation costs. That's my bad. I thought they were in there. They are not. Transportation costs are not. That's my bad. That's what happens when you. That's what happens when you let the sheriff think.
Excuse me, but Grant County has not been very favorable to this county in the fact that this money comes from Mineral Beach, and every time that there is a protest and people from the county comes up and tries to stop that, I have a hard time really getting behind a project that the next time something comes up, they're there to stop. The revenue's coming in the state, and Grand County is a great example. They have a lot of minerals sitting there, revenue, and there's no public comment here. Where are the citizens saying, yeah, this is the idea. Let's go begging for money from people that were protesting against. And so I guess that's just a comment from myself, is that I'm having a hard time thinking. If that is needed, do I want to vote for this because of what's going to happen come down to Washington? So maybe that's just what we need to take back to the citizens there. And nobody showed up to make a comment on that. It's, we want this, and we'll start out and let that come up. So if anything, I must come to that. That's about
it. Mr. Monitor, Mr. Messer,
The follow-up question I had is talk about transportation wasn't included in this, but what about is the cost associated with the additional monies to house your prisoners?
There will be a little bit, but I think that's going to be up to the county to probably absorb that some. I mean, like I say, Emory County right now is going to do it at the minimum of what it costs them to keep the doors open. And I have not had a chance to sit down with their sheriff yet, so that is that cost.
What about in this package that is not instruction and besides construction?
It's all construction.
So then the other question that I had is for Councilwoman Tubbs, and it goes on from what Commissioner Winters is talking about. Perhaps she could explain to the board why it's that you're so opposed to mineral extractions in county, and it's just here with the open hand saying, help us now at this point in time. Because I do find that a real contradiction coming from Van County and from neighbors. We've invited over the years to participate in the USM 6 County Coalition and other things. We recognize the community beauty and toward this important part of the fact that you're matching in your community. You are severely handicapped in a community that has to place against the drug. And I think that we know you're basically thumbing your nose in front of a board that produces economic dollars for the state and for our communities. So I'd like to know why. I'd like to know why it is that is such an issue, and why it is that I should be for this.
Well, admittedly, that's a difficult question to answer. I can speak for myself. I can't speak for everyone in the county. For myself, I am not opposed to mineral extraction. I am one voice. Our citizens are divided very clearly on those issues, and all we can do is keep on working, and we are. We are trying to work at every level and getting all the stakeholders around the table to work out how we can have all the things that everyone wants. And that includes mineral extraction. It includes developing more of that. And working together with our outdoor recreation community, that many of whom are interested in working with us as well. So all I can say is that we can continue to work on that. I certainly, myself am committed to that. I certainly know Mr. Jackson is committed to that, and many of the people here are. And I can only say that we'll continue to work on that.
Liz, could I?
Yes, you have.
Just add that.
Commissioner,
could you call
speaking loud? Well, I didn't want to get that serious. The point I would make is not everyone in Grand County is opposed to mineral development. It, as Liz said, it's a very diverse and divided community. I would say roughly half and half. So I would hate for the citizens in Grand County who do appreciate mineral development, the jobs and the economics, I would hate it for them to be penalized because we have a very loud and vocal other side of the political spectrum down there. So even though at times it appears all of Grand County is a bunch of, I should be careful here, interesting characters, there are normal people who live there still. And so anyway, I would just, I probably said way too much. I'm going to sit back down.
Sheriff, would you address the state's programs for state prisoners, and if a new facility is there, what are your plans for beds, rentals in the state, and the cash flow and all the other things that will help support this project if it does?
Well, if it does, the current program, I think I'll have my jail commander address what programming we currently offer. And, it's not going to change our size a whole lot, but I think they're already working. So, James, I'll work with maybe if you two want to address that. You could probably do it better than I could.
Programming. Mm-hmm.
At this time, Grand County does not have special programming that qualifies like sexual offenders, but we are at 10 inmates contracted. We have 6. We do have a resolution out there for to add 20 more state inmates. So, and what was your other question?
I just want to get an overall idea of how state prisoners figure into how you will finance and support the cash flow of this jail facility here today.
I would have to defer that, the financing part, to Diana, because she deals with that, the finances. But it does figure in. Right now we have 6, and we're talking with the state to raise those numbers to assist in deferring the cost.
I apologize, sir. I thought you were asking about the current programming that we have. I apologize. Right. It will give us the opportunity to, like you said, to maybe take us up another 10 inmates to the 20, which would be a substantial increase. On part of if you look at part of the payment stuff, that would definitely increase our ability to pay back quicker once we get that done and out of, if we can add the additional inmates. But when we looked at the original funding plan, we tried not to count on the state inmates unless we, well, part of what we did, I take that back, part of what we did look at, because our current one's about $220,000 a year. Is where we're at right now, and we did figure that in as part of the refund of the prepayment. And then if we can add the additional 10, that'll just help that out that much more.
Could we have a state representative come out and address the bill? Good morning, Mr.
Biden. Good morning, Commissioners or Board members. On behalf of the Utah Department of Corrections, I'm happy to represent this opportunity to the inmate placement program for the Department of Corrections. Currently, we contract with 21 county jails throughout the state. We range from contracts as few as 2 and 3 inmates up to about 370. What we have in our contracting, we have an intensive contract monitoring compliance requirements with every one of the jails that contract with state offenders. One of those compliance requirements is that there's a set of 263 nationally recognized legal-based guidelines, legal-based standards that the jail and the contractors have to be in full compliance. And we measure that in 3 different ways. Their policy has to meet the compliance of these legal-based guidelines, which are based on Supreme Court decision, 10th Circuit Court, and Utah Code. On top of that, we actually go in on site and we prove that you follow your policy, you do what you actually say you do in paper, because as we know that there might be some circumstances where you have a policy that might be great in a book, but do they follow it? So we're there on site doing the contract monitoring, and then we're also on site doing physical inspections. I'm the supervisor over that contract monitoring and jail inspection program. Part of the process of why I believe the sheriff and their county councils are here today was a report that I did noting some deficiencies. Our concern is there's some potential constitutional issues with Grand County under the 18th and 14th Amendments of duty to protect. There's some potential fire and life safety issues. Along with these locks and these operations of the doors. It's not that these doors pop open. They, in fact, can pop shut and have to be manually key operated. In the event of a fire, that could be a very, very dangerous situation. As of these 263 legal-based standards that the Grant County has been measured to over the last couple of years under the direction of us, they are fully compliant with the exception of one that has to do with these physical issues that they've outlined. Their operations, the issues involving legal access from everything from the prisoner that comes into the door, through housing, through medical, all the way up through release, they are in full compliance with the exception of one standard that has to do with the physical facilities. It's not an operational issue, but once we brought that to the attention of the sheriff and his jail administrator, they have taken some immediate action. They understand the legal ramifications of being deliberately indifferent. they have a duty to follow the law. If you violate clearly established rights of prisoners, not only would the jail be on the hook for that, the county council and the citizens of that community, there is potentially a serious constitutional risk of violating prisoner rights with current physical conditions.
Could you go back and address the question about the reliability of the state as a prisoner supplier in view of new prison plans that are being adopted out, and also the possibility of catch and release?
That I couldn't address the catch and release. I know that the legislature came up with a new program.
Are you going to be able to meet their needs with everybody else's needs?
We have a current resolution for 20 beds for Grand County with the Utah Department of Corrections. I apologize, I'm representing Director Glenn Erkenbrecht today, who got pulled off to a meeting. He would be the one to be talking about the commitment for beds in the budget. Mine is the safety, security, contract monitoring, and secondary. But we would have no reservation.
Yeah. Do we wait until we get in here to address that question about reliability?
That would be up to this board.
Thank you.
Mr. I've got to step back three or four questions, but I'm struggling a little bit because when I look at the prioritized and approved by Grand County Council list approved on March 3rd, 2015, the request for CID was for $1,780,000. And now we're up to $4.78 million. Seems like a big jump in going from March to May 27th when all the construction gave you a bid, which is $4.6 million, is still over $500,000 less than the request here of $5.1 million. So I see way too many numbers that make me wonder if we know what we're really doing here. In addition, I see the Walters project, the maintenance project over the last 23 years. We fund capital improvements and capital projects and infrastructure, not maintenance, that's been deferred, so we can get away with it. So I struggle with that. My third comment is that I would not count on the state as a reliable partner. So whatever numbers they tell you to commit to, I could take a quarter of that or less, especially if we build a new prison and institute new recidivism programs, people hold those prisoners out of the counties. As a former budget director, I think I have some experience at the state level knowing how this works, and so I wouldn't count any revenue from the state in my ability to finance this over 20 or 30 year period. So can you address why we're seeing the numbers change so significantly? What is the real cost? $4.6 million, $5.2 million.
Rick, do you want to address that? You probably got the most of it.
Rick Haley. Mr. Ellis, all I can tell you is when I came on board about a year and a half ago or a year ago, they were looking at the number of about $2 million to go and make the needed repairs that they saw or needed improvements. What we did at that point was go out. We did an RFP for an architect. We hired an architect group, which has some jail background. This was in May and June of this year. Right. We selected them based on two criteria, their previous jail criteria, and that they had experience in remodeling and a correction facility, which none of the other architects that we interviewed did. Part of their proposal was they were going to use Hogan Construction, who has a long history of construction in Grand County. We felt like they would be able to give us the best cost estimates of anybody we could get, knowing that the rooms during the summer for workers that have to come in are going to be $300 to $400 a night. That they kind of knew all that, where we just pulled some numbers off from some others, but that may not be the case. And so we feel really strong that Hogan is giving us good numbers for Grand County, but it is 5.5. And it's all.
Well, their numbers are 4.6. How do we get to 5.2? 4.6, including architects, construction managers, and industries.
Well, the last one we submitted, which I'm reading out, construction is $4.8 million. We've got 253 for pre-construction.
The one I have is
And we submitted a new estimate with the last application we sent in.
Well, I should have all current information that we have submitted.
I provide you with what I have, which is what we submitted.
I'm just looking at all the investment right here that's built on stage. Well, I have that in the paper. I'm looking at this whole thing. Grant timing is all remodeled basically based on architecture for drawings and magnified points.
We can go back and clarify those.
We get that payment through that. So we don't want to rely, but kind of back to your question, heavily on inmate state reimbursement for that payment. So we've built in the general fund budget, which we also will not have the ongoing repairs, you know, the $80,000 to $100,000 of repairs. But I feel pretty certain that we can with increased sales tax. This money will come from the general fund for the payment. I feel pretty certain that we'll be able to make that payment. We have a $400,000 fund balance in that debt right now that we can use for our cash portion of this application. And the reason that we asked for that deferment was to help absorb some of the cost of placement of the inmates in Emory County and the additional staffing that that will require. If we use the, if we defer that payment, we'll have the money from our general fund to cover those costs.
Basically, it was a year to kind of get us back on our feet. So if we did have to use the inmates, it gave us a year to get them back from the state, get everything up and going, and make sure that we were able to do it.
the question I have for the person to tell us is, if we look back on page 3-4-3, this board has kind of a number of county scale over the years. Those have been very heavily funded for the loan at 2.5%. Very, very little of any ever comes out of the grant. And that you're requiring is for more than half of the age grant. And the loan portion is at 0%, which is not a practice of this board. So, are we going to need to take the full amount at 1.5%?
We did talk about that during the county council meeting, and at that point we would have to depend on state inmates to make additional payments. So we just do not want to have to depend on that revenue.
Well, I appreciate the discussion that's gone on. I think maybe a little bit of these people are in front of us here, Jay and Mom, are their friends. you need to understand that they represent the people that we want to see minerals developed in Grand County. And there is an increase of minerals being developed in Grand County. If you look at your sheet, Grand has moved from 8 to number 7. We've often talked about the fact that we'd like to see a good project come from Grand, and whether this is the good project that we've been looking for. I guess each one of us will have to decide. Grand County is right next to San Juan County. Lynn and I enjoy letters to the editor from Grand County folks on occasion. But you know how I feel about counties that are really close to San Juan County. I've mentioned that before from time to time. But I do want to point out that the folks here are friends. They're not the people that object or protest or do the kind of things that are into to this board. And they support mineral development. So, and it's hard as a board member not to try to micromanage a little bit of what's going on with the application, but these people are the ones that we can trust. The sheriff and Diane and Liz and Rick and I'm going to mess up here because I can't name all of them, and Jackson and those folks. So I'm going to encourage the board to be supportive of the project. I think Commissioner McKee has a proposal that he would like to make concerning the interest rate. And if that's something that they can live with, I'm certainly going to speak in favor of the project and speak in favor of my friends from I think we can do a lot of that today by by showing the world, you know, understanding, and we're going to go back to the council and manage this stuff. Let's talk about ways to do information from all these kinds of tasks. And it's a motion, I'll tell you about it a lot, it's always a motion, the board is going to consider it. I asked Richard ahead of time, kind of a couple minutes ago, while we were taking the shop and interest rate, would you be able to change your payment rate? It's slightly better for you than the proposed, that would change the term of this rule. And the reason I'm going to suggest this is a motion. When you look at our loan funds, we have money in that account. When you look at our other funds, we're the debt. And so if we could kick some of this over to the 1.5% loan that I'm going to ask for, the 1.5% loan that meant more than a grand. That's the thing to be honest with the answer to what they're asking. So I'm going to suggest between the $250,000 grant, a $1,950,000 1.5% principal loan.
I'll second that.
Do you want to take the numbers before? $3,250,000 in grants, $1,950,000. If you have worked on the numbers, Richard, I thought that I had that correct. So we're really not changing the terms for them for something like that. And we'll take some of that in 1.5% of this loan. It helps us in our account as a board because then we'll have, it helps out how that account works better. Because we do have surplus on one account and where the negative's on the other. And that's what we're going to say. That's the way we're going to do it. We're just trying to make sure we're better on our account.
So, Mr. Reed, you're trying to get to the 4.78.
Whatever my issue is, What are the figures again? I'm still struggling between hundreds of thousands and millions.
It's a $4.3 million loan, 2.5% per year, and a $400,000 grant in escrow check.
Just zero.
If there's no discussion on the motion, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, so all opposed are Commissioner Adams and Commissioner McKee. Any others? Okay, the motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Ron Reyes. I am the current mayor of Bath. This is Dwayne Barner. He is the council member of the match. And
I'm Curtis Nielsen with Ensign Engineering,
who is our engineer representative today. Most everyone that we approach, asks where match is. So I'll just fill you in just a little bit. Match is located on Highway 89. It's at Bryce Canyon, about 30 miles to the east. Cedar Breaks National Monument is approximately the same distance to the west, and Bryce Canyon is about 55 miles to the south. We have a lot of tourists that come through town, and for that reason, why we are approaching the board with a proposal to get some funding for a plan to upgrade our current location for structures, and also for to increase our or improve our combined water. And like I say, our drainage structure, and also to locate we haven't had a site plan per se that I am aware of, and that's part of the reason that we'd like to see this request this money, because we need a plan in place before we can move forward on any of the things that we'd like to do.
A couple of questions that came up earlier. One is on your digging of your engineering services.
Mm-hmm.
And the second would be collaboration with the regional planner and I hear you briefly about the questions.
The reason we didn't ask for or require put out for competitive bid engineering services. Ensign Engineering has a history with Hatch. In particular, in December, they did a proposal for us on requirements for water rights updates for the town of Hatch. They were a little bitter on that, and for that reason, we considered them as our engineer for this type of project. And the other question?
We're working with Gary Zabriskie in his office at Clyde County on coordinating planning members.
Well, we have lately met at Shannon Ellsworth and it's a rural planning group, and you know, I'm a new councilman, we've got a new mayor here, and we do plan to take advantage of her training and services that she has, and so forth.
I'm sure you work with the Class Member Association of Governments that have to work with on the one. And they're two separate entities. There's rural planners and regional planners. Shannon has got the rural type.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to work with both to make sure that there is a regional coordination plan as well.
Okay.
And then, of course, we always encourage everyone to make sure that they're getting the professional services, including engineering, very serious, to make sure that they're getting
you can tell that we are very new at this. We are having quite a turnover in our town leadership over the last couple of months, actually. So I'm the new mayor, and we have a new councilman, so we are baked in the woods and approaching you guys with something like this. So we're just trying to represent something that would be along with the what you guys are looking for, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
You're certainly not like that. You can answer that. Any other comments?
I just want to make a comment on the reason I'm asking this question. One is it's a matter of state law and procurement law. I believe there's an exception. Less than $5,000, you can just appoint someone to do it once you're the Attorney General's office. And because I have, I run another board, this has been a key issue, and I think entities have cost themselves a lot of money by not going through the procurement process. The other one, the financial services industry, referred to as churning, that you get a stockbroker and responsibly selling your account just because he makes a commission every time you buy him to sell the stock in your account, so he's happy to do that for you. I know our engineers sitting in this room are going to do this, but sometimes if they're concerned that we have engineers that maybe work is slow, and so you, well, let's do an update on your water map or your transportation master plan or these kinds of things to keep the business and the dollars flowing into their accounts. So if you're going through a procurement process and you're stepping away from that ability to just be pushed by engineers to do these things, whether you need them or not. And our life of planning, I think, is great to do in these things, so I'm not opposed to any of that. But for your own good and your own pocketbook, I think it's really important to be doing competitive bidding for professional services. And I spend way too much time in my office doing that. And I do know how burdensome and horrible it is. But I also know it pays an awful lot of dollars, and I don't see how that happens in these entities that I end up having to work with.
With that, we'll take a moment. I have a question. Oh, Chairman. Mr. John, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm telling you, I don't have any good job. I'm here to tell you, I'm standing in the councilman trying to get all the issues. But to have you consider talking to the division of the drinking water for the matching funds and get any kind of resources from them, or anybody?
From what I understand, the application has been made, right?
The application has been made and submitted in review. Nathan Hall, I spoke with him earlier this week. I anticipate we'll hear back from them in the next week or two. It can be approved at staff level. It doesn't have to go before the board.
So this is the last one, right?
Yeah.
And on the board's information, the staff was not in the process of a planning grant without the district. We have to get that from the amount that was achieved.
So if they don't come with it, if they don't come up with the matching, then they
know that. So that's why I'm working.
I move to become the project.
Thank you very much, Mr.
Wilkie. I'm sorry, did you make any motions?
No, I'm just. Did you give any motions?
I just made a motion.
Mr. Wilkie, let me have made a motion. Second. And so Mr. Rasmussen has seconded it. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you,
gentlemen. Thank you.
We may find this for consideration in the October meeting.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Okay. Oh, I'm kind of comfortable to take a break before we get to the next one. Let's keep it to about 10 minutes, please.
Yeah. What? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Jack Erwig, Beaver Fire District 1 Board Chair. We're looking to purchase a 2016 new fire pumper, help us with dependability, safety, and a little bit of our volunteer fire department morale, given the new stuff. Any considerations you guys could help us with would be greatly appreciated.
Any questions from the board on the project?
I appreciate that you're locking in over $120,000. So often we don't see that, so I commend you for that. The asset you're buying is an appreciable asset as a new life, and you've got a couple of other little pretty in the lean. So I'm just wondering what your costs are those. If you have additional money, if when those go out, you'd be able to replace those.
Well, hopefully our tax base continues to go up to help us out. In the last year, it's gone up $50,000 down there. And so about $100,000 to $160,000. We have a new project going at out there on Sulphurdale. Let's go.
Is the county helping any of the district here in this needs?
The county itself don't get any funding, just tax dollars. Right. And we're all volunteer. I've been with the department for 40 years now. I'm the assistant chief also. I've been with the ambulance service, which is an enterprise fund. And that's what Fire District runs, both the ambulance and fire.
I'd like to make a couple comments. First, we're the father, and my daughter's actually a firefighter, volunteer firefighter, so I appreciate the service that you do. Typically, if I look at the chart, how we normally fund them, we do a 50-50 split, and I assume that that's going to be difficult for you. I also see that typically we extend about 40% grant and 60% loan.
I'm wondering why
nobody's looking at the public meeting minutes that state they're going to ask the $300,000 request from the Sea Library, and the request comes in at $407,000. I believe that's a question you just hammered the name pretty hard, because
I don't think we had a price yet on the fire truck for public meeting. We didn't have a bid back.
The fire district one board meeting and public hearing, public meeting, says we are requesting $300,000 from CIB, 50% grant, 50% loan. On page 3614.
It might have been a typo. As soon as we got the truck back, we talked about half and half, 127 from the district.
Did you get several bids on the truck?
Yes, we had two bids, both in the state of Utah, One from a Pierce fire truck, and the one we're getting was a low bid from Ferrara. Two bids, definitely. Yeah, we want to make sure that
any other questions or discussion? Mr. Chief, just following up a legal question for Tom and Captain Duda. What would happen if the minutes and what we have to rely on is what the public has to rely on? And for the public, had reason to believe, based on the minutes, that their obligation is going to be a certain amount, and this is a substantial change that I'm going to have to do that. Is that a problem that
is to approve that?
Not much different compared to, you know,
just asking the question.
What is
the problem? Over the years, it used to be that maybe it used to be that they would always see the public meeting and say, we're going for a grant, and then come and ask for a loan. And I want to make sure that the public is not being significant or substantially misled. And sometimes they will turn back and say, no, you go back and say, the loan is responsibility. Any rules to require that?
Grand County, when their figures were a little bit different than the public meeting, for the application. I just wondered.
It seems to me to be a problem. We sort of had a motion. I think we need some clarity from Mr. Galecki on exactly what the motion was. I know the second is clear on what he's doing.
What I planned on the motion was $250,000 loan at 1.5%, and $157,000.
And if you're denying the price of the motion, any further discussion, Mr. Renato, I'd like to make a substitute motion and place this on the pending list and then go back and clarify that. Is there a second to the motion from Commissioner Anderson to put this on the pending list? The motion to put it on the pending list, we're waiting on that whole second public hearing determining what they can and can't afford.
Motions have gone to this for the funding. They have to approve of the funds, so we change all the terms of their request. They have to go back and forth to their council and change of the details anyway. So then, public, the city council, they didn't know about the terms of the change, the loan amount, advance. So they have to report it at the town vote anyway. There's no sense of delaying the motion.
So we do have a substitute motion before us. If that fails, then we can go back to the original, or can we get a different motion at all?
I think we will accomplish the same thing. I mean, we need to have answers.
So we're back to the original motion. Commissioner Garrett and Commissioner.
I'm the Director of Community Development for the Town of Springdale. This is Brian Barton from Jones and DeVille Engineering. We're here to request $15,000 in grant assistance for a transportation master plan for the Town of Springdale. Springdale is the gateway community to Zion National Park, located immediately adjacent to the park entrance. In recent years, visitation to Zion National Park and to Springdale has increased significantly. At the same time, development in Springdale has also been increasing. These two factors have combined to create traffic and parking congestion problems in the town of Springdale. As an example, just anecdotally, this past Memorial Day, traffic was bounced up about 45 minutes to an hour on State Route 9 through the town of Springdale, about a distance of about 2 miles, waiting to enter Zion National Park. That's an unsustainable situation for the town and for Zion National Park. Our proposed master plan will seek creative solutions to this traffic and parking congestion problem. Some of the unique characteristics of Springdale being a long, narrow town constrained on both sides by a tight canyon, with the state highway being the main thoroughfare, presents some interesting challenges that we hope to address through this transportation master plan. So it's not going to be a typical transportation master plan where you can look for alternate routes or just add a lane here and there. It's going to be a significantly complex plan. There were a couple of questions that came up earlier that I just maybe like to provide some preemptive answers to. One was an issue about whether or not there was a public hearing or just a town council meeting. We did hold a public hearing as part of our town council meeting. They were for efficiency's sake held together, but it certainly was noticed and advertised as a public hearing and also conducted as a public hearing. There's also a question about competitive selection. We did go through a competitive selection process. We received 4 bids to do our transportation master plan, and Jones and Millen is the most attractive bid to the town. So we did satisfy that requirement. And the last question was about an increase of in scope. Originally, we had a scope and a budget amount. After analyzing the project and considering the complexities that are involved in the project, some of those which I've just recounted, it was determined that we needed to go into more detail at a greater depth with this project, and that's the reason for the increased cost and the increased scope.
Move to approve.
We have a motion by Commissioner Adams and a second by Commissioner Potter. Any discussion? Commissioner Jarrett.
I'm sorry. But in the minutes, page 717, public hearing, it says the town has budgeted money for the project, but the engineering counter command to be built after CID funds. So I'm wondering why there is you already had the money. So
yeah.
I find that hard when you've already got it, and from the recommendation of the engineering firm, you want to manage the tax kit. You know, I just don't think that's what we're in the business of, is funding tax when I'm it really of the money. So
thank you. Excellent question. And again, that was part of the reason Jones and Danilo's proposal to the town was attractive, was because they recognized the fact that at the amount we had budgeted and had the money available, we probably wouldn't get the level of study that would satisfy our needs and solve our problems. And so they said, we can do that study for you at the amount of money that you have budgeted and you have available. However, if we wanted to expand the scope and analyze these problems in greater depth and greater detail and provide you a more substantial study, one will probably be more effective for you, we can take your money that you've already budgeted and use that as a match to approach the CID to get additional resources to expand that scope and look at these problems in more depth and more detail. We have budgeted about
$20,000.
So, you're talking about $15,000. Why less than $20,000? There was an additional amount that Jones and DeMille, for the service of helping us through the CID process, that we can help you through the CID process for an additional amount. So our total out-of-pocket cash is about what we had originally budgeted, but we're using that additional match from the CI, or the additional grant from the CIB to expand the scope of our study.
Yeah, and as we...
I guess the question is,
about
if there are
any
commitments,
you
don't
think
So again, we did a competitive bid process, and Jones Engineering was the successful bidder through that competitive bid process. So we selected them to provide the study for us. At their recommendation, and after looking at the scope that we had established, they said, we can do a better, more effective study for you with additional funding from the CIB. So we did go through that competitive bid process. We don't have a signed contract with Jones Engineering at this point because we haven't yet nailed down what that scope will be. If we're unsuccessful in obtaining the additional funding from the CIB for the expanded scope, then we'll have our original scope and contract with Jones Engineering. If we are successful in obtaining the additional funding, then we'll have an expanded scope and contract. We haven't executed that contract at this point.
What things did you get additional? How
have
you experienced
those in the project? Greg, as we looked at the needs of the town and we looked at the budget that they had estimated, I don't know how that initial budget was put together, but we compared the needs of the town and the number of hours that would be required to get what they need done. To look at functional classification planning, pedestrian planning, bicycle planning, parking planning, as Tom mentioned, just the interaction with Zion National Park is going to take a fairly significant effort, as Tom mentioned. We've got
so there's a change categories, it's just here instead of more.
Exactly. We're going to go a little bit deeper instead of going step A, let's go to step B and C on some of these efforts because we don't want to spend the money, either the town's money or the CIB's money, and end up with something that isn't very useful for the town moving forward with all the complex issues that they're dealing with at that location.
Thank you.
or otherwise considered private land for this project?
Yeah, Springdale is outside the boundaries of the Dixie MTO, so they're unable to spend their funds outside of the Metropolitan Planning Organization boundaries. So those funds aren't available to us. However, we have worked with UDOT. As you are aware, UDOT is currently doing a corridor-wide study on SI-9. And certainly there's some efficiencies there that we're taking advantage of with that study. But we haven't approached UDOT specifically for hard funding dollars, although we fully intend to work in partnership with them.
Have you talked to anyone who's got a target down to see if you can be qualified for matching funds or anything?
No.
Next question. I'm going to return to the beautiful town of Dave, and how do you think folks who widen those roads, knowing that it's already pre-existing business and commercial, you have to make a challenge. I'm sure that Brian will. Do you have any idea what you're going to do? Because we have similar pictures in Washington and Santa Clara. They have really challenged to try to widen the streets already in narrow anyway. So what's the proposal?
Yeah, it's definitely a tight corridor. It's going to take some creative juices and discussion with business owners, with town folks, to utilize existing parking areas wherever they can be found. You know, the concept of parking structures in coordination with the national park needs to be part of the discussion as well, to go vertical rather than trying to spread. Find more horizontal space. So it's a very complex problem. We'll come back and tell you what the answer is. I don't know where we're going to end up on the big picture.
So you haven't got approval from the superintendent of the park regarding this project yet?
We have in our application, there's a letter of support from Superintendent Brady Bob for the project, and they also intend to be fully cooperative through the process. Because the town and the park are so interrelated, anything that we do is going to need their support, and they're fully on board with the project.
Thank you. Spend all the money and then know
that they're paying.
Yeah.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Pat Kearney, and I am the lone warrior coming to beg for your approval from Torrey Town in Wayne County. We have an opportunity presented to us early this winter to purchase land directly adjacent to current Torrey Town's property, which has buildings on it. It has a home on it, and there's actually two building lots in addition to that. It's right adjacent to Torrey Town's existing town hall, which is our fire department, one bay. And we are in the process of growing constantly, and we saw this as a great opportunity to pick up additional green space, storage space for our town equipment, which currently sits outside 365 days a year. And that, I think you all have the photos and descriptions right there, and that is why we have come to beg of your kindness. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you'd like about our project, and I'll leave it up to you. Having talked to the town treasurer, we can transfer some funding into our budget of about, well, we're sitting at $185,000 in our rainy day fund, enterprise fund. And we could transfer some of that. We're not sure what kind of cushion we would remain based on what is required. I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
What was your amount?
185. I think that's doable. Exactly sure where we're going to be able to go with that water project, how it'll all fall together, but we definitely have to increase the water that is available to us, so we've got to go for water for the very, very long run. And this project may give us some space for the future as well. We're trying to look way down the pike, and we're just a little teeny town, but a great big water district to service.
I have another question. Is the value of the property as far as real estate, is it in the...
Yes. It's, I can't remember where exactly the numbers, but it was right there what we asked. I beg your pardon. It was under. But this is the private owner. That was the price that they gave to us. Because I had the assessed value that I went through, and it just so happens that the property is... county tax assessors. So it was assessed a little bit under what we asked for, but that's what they asked for.
So there is no other legal on the property, just the tax assessors?
Yes, sir. We consulted appraisers, and they said it's commercial, it's residential, it's commercial, it's residential, and nobody wants to touch it, unless it was required.
They didn't have comparables on it?
That's why they didn't want to touch it, because Wayne County is so odd that they didn't want to do it.
Any further questions? I have just a comment. Is this the Moosman here today, or did it come?
I'm sorry, what?
The Moosman, the owner of the property?
Yes, sir.
He has indicated that he wants to run away far away from the chaos. So I'm thinking, what kind of chaos are you talking about right now?
Well, he's right across the street from the pavilion, from the town park, and our little town pavilion is used extensively during the summertime for family reunions, and the traffic pretty much is nonstop.
Well, you should tell us a blessing. You can get a free day by the time we're back.
Pretty close.
But if you're not happy, so we can't do it. We have to get a day out this way.
They moved about 2 blocks away.
Okay. Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much. We do appreciate it.
Well, let's move up the road a couple miles to the town.
Good morning, Chairman, board members. Staff, appreciate your time today.
My name's Gil Hunt. I'm the mayor of Bickville. A very thankless job. I took this job over about a year and a half ago when I returned after retiring to this town. And one of the main reasons I did is because the prior council and mayor had just got us into two big loans for water system. Now, I was not living there full time at that time. And I never heard one word about getting loans. When I did, I finally got a notice in my water bill, and I went to the town meeting. Well, it's too late. They'd already taken out loans. I was very irritated by that. Anyway, one of the first things I had to do as mayor was raise the water rates because they weren't bringing in enough money to pay the loans and maintain the system. So I wasn't very popular. The first thing I did was raise the water rates. Put in a tiered system where we could charge those that use more water, charge them more, encourage a little conservation, pay the bills. Another thing I found out real quick was that our budget was pathetic. We bring in a little bit of tax, sales tax money. That's probably the biggest revenue for our general fund. They're bringing in a little bit of the property tax, just enough to pay our electric bill, which just went up. Our street lights, we're going to pay for street lights. Not just one off. I had a good idea to replace the street lights with LED lights and save half the power bill. So I went to the Garkin Power and said, if I can get the money to replace the lights with LEDs and save half the power, would that work out please? He says, no, we're going to charge you the same. I go, oh, really? Guess I won't do that. So I went to the director board of the Garkin and I said, this isn't a very good way to do business. Anyway, I've never got an answer on that one. But I'll quit boring you. I'll get to this project that I've applied for. We have a water system, a storm drain system, roads, cemetery, etc., and we try to keep it all working. We have a backhoe that we use extensively that's getting old. We find ourselves needing to rent a mini excavator from time to time because we can't get the backhoe into where we need to use it. And we have a pipeline that runs 3.5 miles from our mouth spring down our storage tank. Sometimes it gets washed out. We have to go up and fix it. Last time we fixed it, the town maintenance guy and myself took picks and shovels up there and covered it up. If we had a mini excavator, we could use that. I know that I've applied for a grant with no skin in the game. I understand that. It's hard to give up skin when you don't have any. I'd love to. We right now have a chip seal project going that you guys funded last year, and we appreciate that. Hopefully, we're not going to have to take some money out of our capital outlay fund just to make up the difference on that. I don't think we will. So that might leave a little extra we could show for this, I'm hoping. I've been trying to get the downtown looking a little better so we can attract more businesses, because that's where we get money, from sales tax. So I did take some money out of the capital outlay fund to do one block improvement there, improve the parkway and make it look better. I've already got one more business coming to town. We are going to get a little more money from the gas tax, but just to change that, we had the proposal for the optional sales tax. Problem was, the county raised the property tax 17% last year. The only thing on the budget this fall is a tax increase for the schools. And we thought, well, if we add another tax increase for the only other thing on the budget, it's not going to pass. So we put that off till next year. I guess I'll just open it for questions. I'm running out of something to talk about.
I would like to just make a motion to approve and have that street as a priority list. I have been to that town so many times. I've seen that not the mayor himself, but it's the other president in a rainy day, broken the pool. The street being broken, and there's just one of the biggest part of the car that's unavailable. So I agree with your land that they have to go through this, and by way of doing the way he has requested, they can lose $200 a month on approved month rent. So that's at least from there. We have a motion by Mr. Zanotti to move to the presentation list as presented, and a second by Commissioner Jarrett. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Mayor Hunt, let me just express on behalf of the entire board our appreciation for your public service at May. I think we all understand how thankful that you would be the most efficient.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here. My name is Mike Waite. I'm the Public Works Director from Morgan County. Our project started, this whole process started 3 years ago when I arrived at the county and realized that we didn't have any maintenance program written down whatsoever for our pavement maintenance. So I started to develop and finished a 10-year maintenance program for the county. And inside of that, it was very comprehensive. We went through, we have some of our roads that would go up to a state park. I've looked at state lands access money. I've looked all over the place. And so inside of this, it would show that we would need to spend about $1 million a year to maintain what we have. And so I'm out looking and trying to, I'm very passionate about good roads and maintaining the good roads that we have rather than just letting them go and realizing the cost of full reconstruction. We have two main roads in Morgan County that go through, right through, and they're the main arteries for the county. And so I-84, anything happens to I-84, every bit of traffic is then put on these two roads. They're main bike routes and one of the main marathon routes through the valley there. As you see, years ago, before my time, the county opted to take out a bond for a significant amount of money that would take a yearly bond payment of $183,000 or so. And with our BNC road funds, it would take a significant amount to accomplish what I'm setting out to do. So with this project, I will tell you, without this funding, I won't be able to do this project without this grant. And so I just hopefully that'll explain the project and what we plan to do.
Thank you, Mr. Wade. Any questions from board members? It's a dangerous precedent, especially with grants.
that I'll show you more. It's just, you know, possibly $20,000 more than the state average on the income. And then I don't want the,
as early as next spring. Yeah. It'll be too late in the fall to do anything on pavement preservation. May I make one comment on in regards to the loan? The reason why I applied for the grant is if we take all of our BNC monies and we pay back loans, it leaves us nothing at the end of the day to preserve our maintenance. And that's why I asked for a grant.
So if you say then yes, I just think the way that you're saying. Any further discussion?
Just a project that's subject to the motions. And if the board's coming from the state of doing this, then interest rate be the 2.5%. Understanding what you're saying with all the space that you should be
So the subject of the motion is the same as that the interest rate was the standard 2.5%.
Okay.
Very glad you did that. Any discussion on the subject of the motion? All in favor of the substitute motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
This will be placed on the priority list for the consideration of the board.
Okay, thank you.
There are a number of gentlemen and women still sitting in the back, so I suspect some of them will come forward now and represent the 6 County Infrastructure Coalition. Thank you. Since this is a special consideration of what I wanted to speak, the board needs to vote to allow me to do so. Can I get a motion? Commissioner Mata moves. Is there a second? Commissioner Mata is second. All in favor? Now we can listen. Senator Oakland, if you have any witness, would you like to introduce yourself and your budget?
Thank you. Good morning. Need to make sure you understand that I am before you today representing the 6 County Infrastructure Coalition as Executive Director, and we are here to make sure that we hope to give you the very best understanding of what we think is a very important project that we've been looking at for the past month or 6 weeks. First, we know you understand how much of an impact there is in Uinta and Duchesne counties from the production of natural resources in that area. Over the years, they have contributed by far the most over the past number of years, and by far the most to CIB funds. So CIB has been able to help all of these little communities that come in before. And of course, they're very appreciative of that, as are all of the communities in the rural part of the state. Without this fund, it would be pretty hard to do anything nice in any of those rural communities. As a result of that impact that there is in Uinta Basin, in most of the counties specifically, a number of the effects of the impacts have been addressed by this board over the years. water, roads, buildings, a lot of the traditional kinds of projects and services that CIB has looked at over the years. We're going to bring to you today something that is a little bit not as traditional. It's going to be a little bit different, and it may stretch the definition a little bit of what the board has done. We think that it's a tremendous project. One of the, or a couple of the greatest effects or the impacts out in the basin that have not been able to be addressed are lack of power, which is now manifest in that area with power outages, brownouts, because they don't have enough power as a result of all of the growth in the basin, not only to deliver power to the energy companies that are producing our mineral lease funds, but also for the public. And so they've got to a crisis. They need to be able to find a way to be able to deliver the power that is needed for all of the development that they're having out there. Another effect that has not been able to be addressed is the air quality. As a result of all of the drilling in the basin and all of the production and all of those wells that are out there using propane to drill and do everything that they have to do out there, it contributes to the ozone, not only to the Uinta Basin, but to the entire state and all the way down through the national parks to some extent. And so it's important for us to be able to address that issue in some way, and we think we have a really good way to do that, to make sure that we're able to meet the attainment levels that we have to in the state by cleaning up the air out there. The way to do that is to electrify those oil fields and make sure that we deliver power to them so that they do not have to use and burn fuels that are out there. So the project that we're bringing before you is, at this point, a 2-mile transmission project. The coalition will build this project, will own this project, and we'll contract, we're not in the business of building, but we'll contract with entities who can deliver power on the lands that we're going to own, if we can get your help to do this. And as a result of this 2-mile project that we're going to be able to start with first, we can address first, and most importantly, the outages that we're having now, and making sure we have the power that we need in their region. Now, this could and probably should be a much bigger project, and maybe other phases down the road. There will be other phases down the road. If we are going to be able to provide this power to these fields and all of the public, all of the residential use that we're seeing as growth as a result of that, we're going to need to continue to build lines that go further out into the counties to be able to deliver that power. So the coalition will continue to invest, and we're hoping for your help to be able to do that and be able to deliver that power that's needed out there. So the application that we have before you, as you can see, is for a total of 1.35 million. You'll notice that in addition to that, we have asked, and we have letters of support, as you've seen from many of the folks in the industry out there. They are willing to contribute to the tune of 25% of the project. So what we're asking for is a 25% grant. We'll use that 25% that the industry is willing to contribute, and we're asking for the rest of 50% in interest-bearing loan at 2.5%. We have Brian Barton from Jones & Mill Engineering, who can break down the cost a little bit and talk about exactly what we are going to be, what we're going to need to build, and the cost that is associated with that. And also with me today is Eric Johnson, who's our bond counsel for the coalition, who can address any legal questions that may come up. So, Brian, do you want to take 15 minutes and talk about costs, or do we need to do that at this point? We may just ask for questions. You have the application in front of you, and it may be better just to take questions.
Why do they require
have you address that.
I want to make sure I get you the right number here. It is a, I'm missing the number here. Mike? What's the KV? KV water charge? 138 KV.
Any question on the driveway?
Yes, the driveway, the 2 mile stretch, the easement is in place and secured. The larger project or the continuation of the project on the other side of the corridor is, preliminary discussions have been held and it's, we're confident that the rest of the right of way as the project extends through the future phases will be secured.
On the question of the capacity, the growth and projections, do you have any idea how long it before you have more transmission capacity?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Basically, there's about 2 years of capacity left. There are 12 megawatts of power capacity left. So at current growth rates, you're looking at a very short window of remaining capacity. This project could take, 4 to 5 years by the time all the phases are built out to be able to connect. And so there are 3 years, 2 to 3 years of real questionable period, whether we'll be able to provide power, or the entity will be able to provide power to the growth that is occurring there. So, there's about 12 megawatts of remaining capacity left, and that capacity can quickly be chewed up. So the electrical entities in the basement have to be very, very careful about allocating new growth, which complicates the situation.
Thank you for being here and sharing this information. A few months ago, we had a B3 policy retreat, and that the our council reminded us that we have to be careful about the project becoming different from the scope of our guidelines that we've been given, which is the planning, construction, maintenance of the public facilities, and provision of the public services. Is this project, which can be part of the
Thank you. Yes, that's one of the things that we have looked at very extensively. And there's no question that it is a needed public service as we see the shortages that are occurring out there that need to be provided. And in looking at a transmission line, like a toll haul road or a water line that is owned by a district, but the actual owners of the water flow the water through the power line or through the water lines. This transmission project is very similar. The coalition would own the project and own the transmission lines and would be providing that public, helping to provide that public service that is needed out there. It's a public service that's needed, and so it's a public facility and public ownership that would be provided by the coalition to be able to do this. So we think it fits the scope of what the CID does, and it's different from some of the other projects that you had. I know we had a project that came a while back that was a natural gas line that you looked at, and it would not have been owned by the applicants at the end of the payback period. This one will be. This one is going to be a public facility, will be continually owned by the coalition, and we'll have an operation and maintenance agreement with those entities, and there are some the ones that are providing it power out there now to the companies and the residences would be able to use those lines. They'll pay for the use of the transmission, and that will allow us to pay back the loan to the CIB and be able to provide this public service.
So the cash
They would not. They would not have any ownership in the line at all. To make the project feasible and make it a little bit more affordable, they understand that of course their growth out there is causing the need to provide more power. They were understanding of that and know how important and necessary it is for power to be delivered out to those sites rather than have them burning fossil fuels out there, and that would help clean up the air. Plus, we know that that the oil and gas industry is really struggling with prices right now. So as difficult as it is in the environment that it is right now, for them to be able to say, look, we'll contribute to this, I think is very important in the environment that we're in. What we are hoping is that we can, by being able to do this, we can entice the folks that are already doing business out there and contributing to all of us, that they will continue to do business out there and then continue to grow. Eventually, as the prices start to climb again, we all know that that's going to happen sometime. And we hope we can continue to see growth because that will help all of us. But if we can electrify those fields with the growth and with the folks that are already out there, we clean up the air and we provide the services that are necessary, not only for them, but for the public that are using those transmission facilities.
Now, the last question is,
what
is the timeline to start the finishing process?
That's why we're here with you for special consideration. We're ready to go on this project if we can get funding in place. As Brian mentioned, we have right of way. It's important that we move on that right of way very quickly and that we are able to get this project moving. We're able to start right away as soon as we have funding in place, and it would help immediately as soon as this transmission line is built. It would help the load that we'd be able to provide so we don't have the outages that we're seeing now.
Thank you.
I am really troubled with this whole project at this point in time. It brings back visions of the Victory Pipeline, of probably a reasonable project that doesn't seem right for discussion or presentation to the board yet. I'm much better at water than I am at power in terms of how water works, and I should be better at power considering my dad spent 40 years in the power industry. But I can understand the capacity issues on the transmission line. So we'll build a transmission line that at the moment looks like a bridge to nowhere. It doesn't have generation stores at the moment. So I sort of look at how we line this up. I see it wants to run down to a generation source, which obviously the district or the group here will not own and will have to purchase that power and run it through the capacity through their transmission lines. And I guess you build, I see most of this being commercial, not a residential type of use of the citizens out there. So the whole business model, we talk about, we'll be able to carry the water or power across the lines and charge a transmission fee, which will obviously be in addition to any power fee and other things. So it'll probably be more expensive electricity than other alternatives. So I wish I thought business plan here to see what are the revenues, how you project it. If it costs us $2 million to build 2 miles and you're building 80 miles, then, that's a $400 million project in my mind, unless you can tell me that these $2 million are exponentially more expensive than the other 78 million miles. So I think as a board, before we commit, we have to understand what that is. I fear with Iran flooding the markets with petroleum that we're going to see $40 a barrel oil out there on the market in the coming months, and it may stay that way for a few years. And as an entity, you have no capacity to repay loans unless you have a project that's complete and finished question of even the oil spills and gas spills. I do see it taking political pressure off of the companies that are out there and air quality issues. I do see it, maybe it's cheaper than it is to run natural gas or electricity. That I don't know because I haven't seen any numbers. It would surprise me, but maybe it is. So there's just a lot of unanswered questions for me at this point in trying to be able to support this project until we know the total scope of it. Are we in this for $43 million? If I look at the Fabian, there's $39 million out there to build 78 miles, and I can't understand why 2 miles that cost us $2 million. The math is a little fuzzy in my head, so I'm just not getting enough of the whole picture here. We make a commitment, we have no taxing authority, unless the county is going to step up and max off this loan, it's difficult to get into this, because we don't know when things will dry up out there. Maybe in 5 years that it all shuts down again, and then where are we? We make commitments, but who knows how much? We don't know at this point in time. So these are all questions I have that I don't see answers that make it impossible for me to support at this point in time.
Thank you. Actually, I would find the tension very close. I think Richard, you bring up some great points. And I would actually say that the cup half empty is the half full. And no reason to explain what I mean by that just a minute. If we look at the revenues that come in from the CID board, I know that the majority of that is actually coming from the state. And every drilling rig that's left in the state of Utah is in the last book that I have is 60 minutes out of the building to change the numbers. Do we want to continue to be able to enjoy the revenues that we've been enjoying? This is a difficult time for our gas industry. One of the understandings that I've had in building a utility company has been they didn't have the capacity to even be able to run the project for a certain group of wells that had enough power. And then, that's some of the challenges we have in the oil and gas industry itself. We are not in non-change. We do not want to go into non-change. We're going to non-change and recognize that Middle Eastern is a criminal federal land. If you're going to non-change, what is the federal government going to do? They're going to say federal land. We've got to back off on the committee. We've got to back off. Maybe we don't even allow any of these wells to change something. So the importance of electrifying the field is an extremely important issue, something that we all recognize for those who are out there. And as Senator Olson mentioned, I'm very pleased that industry is going to make this kind of contribution, because I'm telling you, investment dollars are drying up. Whether it's in North Dakota or Texas or Oklahoma, you're investing in the fact that if they're willing to put some money in, it shows you that there's a commitment to those three things. But do we have, what kind of commitment do we feel for these communities and the leaders? Because these companies are also looking for messages and those kind of things. I think this is an important goal. I think it's important to move forward with it. And my understanding of this project is going to spend in front of the government. There's a portion of benefit for that kind of importance of the media. So, again, excuse me if I have another question.
Mr. Chairman, I think this might be a good time for the board and the board members to have a discussion with regards to participation by board members in connection with this project. There are some concerns that have been raised in the draft with regard to different board members acting as board members in connection with this project. The Six County Coalition, there are a number of board members, CID board members, who are on the board of this entity. The co-chairs are board members. Mr. McKee is one of those. And board members need to be
if there, I think FEMA had a discussion with regards to whether or not there are any technical problems or board problems with regards to those board members participating and in fact board members. Technically speaking, I suppose Senator Overland, Director Overland here, is actually an employee of Mr. McKee's grant. There's concern that has been raised that the question with regard to the board has received elsewhere with regards to acting as a board member when the public entity is you or the officer of is the applicant. These issues have been raised with this coalition. Commissioners have signed by your county attorney. Those county attorneys have indicated that they see no problems or issues with regard to the commissioners acting as board members. The attorney, my office, I think, for the most part, takes a different point of view with regard to that. You are all state officers. Technically, you are a public official. You're a public officer under the City Employees Ethics Act, and that applies to you in the city of those ethical duties as we have talked about before. We have, over the years, developed and specifically tried to avoid some of the concerns and problems with that protocol so that if the county commissioner
disclosure before there's discussion or any votes. What
some disclosure statements to the board members about the project, where they disclose any interest that you have with regards to business that might be affected in your own personal life. There are provisions with regards to you being paid by somebody to facilitate transactions on the agency that you represent. You have to have on file, so you have to pay the player disclosing that statement of information. The situation we have here is that to the extent that a board member is being paid by the county or by the state and association, that might be considered the payment to facilitate the transaction if they were to act as board members. Because the board member is being paid by somebody other than the state, either the salary employee, and to facilitate that transaction. So there ought to be those disclosure statements. We always encourage members to file disclosure statements, listing all those potential areas where somebody might say, why are you acting as if you're having benefit? We're entitled to know if you're going to vote, what are you doing? I'm not sure if the public knows. Just come on this board. It's also on the board of 16.
Commissioner, and I appreciate Tom. I know you guys from jobs to keep close to the legal and doing it out for you. And I do want to mention a little bit. It's not totally uncommon in terms of difficult for you that has happened to the community. Let me just mention this. I do have a letter from the county attorney office, and I would like to just read the last paragraph from the letter, so put it on the record. I do believe other attorneys from the other counties, especially County Attorney Eric Jones, and county organizations have also provided similar type opinions to be provided for the record. So let me just read this last paragraph. And to me, it'd be very good to have a company such a time, just from out of the county, so that's what I'll do. In conclusion, I find, and this is the last paragraph, in conclusion, I find nothing in the ethics act that requires disclosure or recusal of the young county commission to be for an administrative work as a member of the PSA. Further, a contrary conclusion was then the management position in the private sector in Chapter 53 and Title 35A, Chapter 8 of the workforce. Discussion with the government not supported. It is also my opinion that the same principles would apply to the government laws and machines set by virtue of your elected position. That's my opinion if you are free to exercise your full ability in the county 17 to be fully violated from other statutory positions. And in effect, my comment to you by me essentially is. I think there's been a question in my mind related to me as a disclosed. I think in the abundance of caution, I'm going to make several disclosures and to advise what's my intent to vote to state that as well. So it is my intent to vote on this project today. But in the disclosures, I am a member of the Young County Commission, I'm a chairman of the Young County Commission, I'm a co-chairman of the County Infrastructure Coalition, and the power that I receive in my house comes from the name of the director. Which you know, the electric office applies power that would be in this area because you know, under the public service, anyway, there's characteristics of power when it comes to the area that comes from my own. The investment zone is the public service. So I'm just going to go following disclosures and with that, I'm going to be my intent.
Mr.
Chairman,
Commissioner
Adams, and I'd like to also disclose that I'm coaching the 6-county coalition. And I want to point out to the board that when we prepared the application, we probably leaned heavily on our CIB position, maybe more heavily than on our county. Commissioner, our coalition position, we are submitting an application asking for a 30-year, 2.5% interest, $890,000, and only a $460,000 grant. We felt like that in fairness to CID, we needed to protect the CID's interest, maybe more than we tried to protect the counties or the coalition's interest. You see there's a cash match coming as well, but we certainly did not try to get the lowest interest, the most grant, the best deal that we possibly could from the CID. We tried to make sure that the CID's interests were probably protected a little more than maybe if I was a county commissioner coming to the CID and asking for a grant loan. I probably would try to lean a little heavier asking for no interest, asking for more grant money. And so I'm going to disclose that portion of it.
I'd like to make a motion that we approve the project as presented. It in turn facilitates what we're all about in terms of the release and the lower cost of facilitation thereof. I have no stake in this thing because I'm still in this and I think I can do that in good conscience. But with that, I move that we approve this project.
Is there a second?
Mm-hmm.
one of the challenges with other funding sources like the federal government is the lead time is very long and the need to move forward immediately.
And the other part, to build on a couple of things Richard said, as you go down, I guess you'll get multiple bids on this. And then the other is the battle line, this is for a primary line. And then so who's it, will the coalition also build all the other lines as well?
You touch upon something that thank you, that I think needs to be brought up, is that yeah, this is a backbone line primarily. It is envisioned that it will be able to serve some lateral lines down the road. But the immediate need actually is to help out the existing providers in the area. And for that reason, not only would it be helpful that it, for a suspended line, which is very much needed, but also that the loan be granted on a taxable basis for the need to coordinate with those that are already providing power in the area.
Another question is that in the worst case scenario, and that the fields don't continue, how does the coalition, what part of the coalition is responsible for repaying this phase and the future phase?
Do you want to reframe that question? I'm not quite sure I follow it.
Okay, so this is primarily New England County.
It will also be in New England and Duchesne counties.
And in the worst case scenario, the private companies are no longer needing power. Who pays for the repayment of this loan?
I think the question is, what will the security be for repayment of the loan? We will look to enter into agreements that will provide a stable revenue stream sufficient to repay the loan. If we can't do that, we won't be any, you know, we won't draw on the loan.
So you're saying you're entering into take-or-pay agreements and that's the whole?
The exact form has not been introduced.
So, I guess I agree. I don't see any backstop on this. We can't write off loans at our levels. So we have to be thinking about that. Of course, it doesn't blow up. What do we do? Because of the coalition, you have no source. One question I need for clarification. How many young board members on this CID are associated with the coalition? One, two, three, four. So 4 out of 10 board members.
Four.
You know, it's one thing when we only have one board member that might have a conflict, which we run into almost every project that we approve. But when you've got 40% of your board that have, I think, an inherent conflict, I think it's difficult for us to discreet face to look to the public and say, this was, even though we disclosed where our conflicts are, that there wasn't something here that is more than people speak. So I'm really troubled with board members who would refuse themselves on this particular issue to have association with the coalition. I understand your county attorney may be there, and I can see where they get their position. I also understand Mr. Roberts' position, who is responsible for representing this board. So I'm very troubled with that. As I stated earlier, I don't think this is right for us to jump into because we don't even know what the project is. We don't know what the revenue sources are. We don't know where the power is going. We don't know where the power is coming from. We don't know anything about the project. It's just giving $1.8 million. And trust me, that it's in the basement.
Commissioner Garrett.
Well, I'm going to come at it from a different perspective. One, I don't see anything I have more frequently with either from the Wayne County or the Shannon County, which is the library project that you would like to mention. I understand that, but still more of a channel of frequent and structure in Wayne County, and we even want the coalition to support this, whether or not I have more frequent. Secondly, we don't understand the urgency. You told me that in a lot of ways as a steward, and yet I see in your dialogue that the urgency is to secure
It's a good question. It's one that I would ask if I was a board member. That there is some proprietary information that we cannot divulge until we have a project in place. That really makes it important that we move forward. But the real important reason that we move forward quickly, aside from the right-of-way issue, is that we are out of power. We're experiencing brownouts out in that area. Our public is not being served. So remember, this isn't just the oil and gas companies that are out there. This is, and when the power goes out, we're transmission flips because there's an overload. It throws everybody out of power. This isn't just where the lane is running. So this project that, again, will be owned by the coalition, and we'll enter into contracts on take or pay, as Richard said. We'll announce who we look at as operation and maintenance. We'll contract with somebody to build it. We'll contract them to operate and maintain it and wield the power, and then they'll pay us as long as there's a line. That will allow us to serve those needs that are out there. That's really very critical at this point. We have a couple of companies right now that are providing service out there that have no way to be able to meet the needs that are out there on providing power.
So why isn't your provider, the company you contract, doing that? Now, you've got the gas company that we had in our proposal, but I'm wondering, like, before, we also had a little teeny town in Miller County that had a little line that they wanted to repair because it was failing, and they owned the line, and they contracted with the gas company to maintain that line. And we said as a board, we do not want to get in the utility business. So we denied that. We didn't even do it. And now this looks to me like the very, very same car that you own the line, which is going to be helpful.
Could begin to use power in that area. How do you find out who you're doing this?
transmitting across your line?
That's a good question.
How do they know if it's coming across your line or through the other line when the power gets there and you need to remote them as well?
Right.
And then you've got power module along the way.
Right. There are instruments that are metering capabilities that you can install along the transmission power to know both the, you know, what your power is doing on both ends. So it's easy to track. We've got some electrical experts that we're working with to be able to understand that and meter very appropriately what's being used moved across those lines.
So there definitely has some significant serious reservations presented, as well as some very positive arguments for it. Appreciate the discussion. We do have a motion in a second.
Mr. Chairman, before I just try to address the complications that are raised by this discussion, I talked about not seeing any conflicts, not seeing any problems. Mr. Adams, I highlighted some of the potential issues and concerns when you started talking about. I think I'm favoring the impact of our interest over county's interest or over strict county's interest. That's a very strange conversation, very strange thing to say. I'm just trying to disclose, but I thought the application itself favored the CRD. We didn't try to make an application that was favorable to the six county coalition over the CRD. We went out of our way to make sure that we didn't ask for any special consideration. And my comment was not directed to you personally with regard to that. You were pointing at me. My point about can't be is that highlight what some people will see in common when they will think about. So when the coalition is working on the board, put together a proposal, submission to the board, and so, you know, which side is better faith? Those individual members paying more allegiance to their interests as a county commissioner or as a member of the state county coalition with regards to the deal? Or when they vote, are they acting more as an impact board member and taking care of the impact board's interests and the interests of the state program? Because there might be a conflict between them. And that's the problem we've been trying to avoid. And raised for the public to be concerned about. I'm not sure whose interest the person is acting on behalf of when they make this vote. The secondary concern that was raised was with regard to information. Director Overland indicated that he could not provide certain answers to questions because there were proprietary information. Proprietary information, when it's given to a government entity, becomes protected and confidential information. And so, as board members of the Pittsburgh Coalition, you have access to that information. So you have a duty as a board member to act on that information, to share with the board members. So you get into a situation where there is private, protected, confidential information that individuals, on behalf of the applicant, might obtain. And then there's the question, do they share it? Must they share it? Should they share it? And there's specific provisions in the Ethics Act with regards to improperly inducing one to improperly release that information, i.e. if someone is not authorized to receive it, or to disclose it. And if you have information about the project that affects it, whether or not the force to vote on it, you have that information, you should share that with your board members. And a lot of people would probably say yes. As a board member, you have the duty to share information that you have with regards to the policy project and works for you and the board to sustain their duty and obligation. So, just wanted to comment on a couple of those issues with regards to whether or not board members are going to want to recuse themselves or how they would participate. In the past, you know, board members have gotten off sides, come down and make a presentation, something down to their hands. comments we made today by Commissioner Keating to ask Mr. Potter, Mr. Winterson, could be in that capacity as that, so they can speak. The question is, well, how they're acting, and are they doing that as board members or as part of the applicant? Because they are part of the applicant, they are the officials of the applicant. So, just want to make those points again. Concerned about the evolving this issue. Ethics, as I talked about, for both an individual matter, which individual, he or she has to decide what is appropriate. It's not necessarily my job to tell you what to do. The board can establish policies with regards to how the board members act, protocols. That would be your power as a board, not as necessarily enforcing the ethics. The only way to finally fully resolve this, I suppose, would be some type of litigation. You would still be challenged by somebody or criminal charges. Some prosecutor's foolish might think that any of you would not want to intervention in violating the act.
Chairman, I appreciate that, counsel. I think that's good advice. We have a couple further comments, and I'll start with Mr. Garrett.
Just one more little caveat. When we have done projects, like a lot of projects or whatever, we have asked the applicant to differentiate who is receiving the water. So we've never from the portion of the water project that went to my irrigation companies. We try to make sure that what we have funded them is the public. And this one is still a little funny for me. Who is the benefactor of this proposal? Is it private industry? Is it private irrigation companies? How many public are going to benefit by this? And what proportion of this project does that go to fund? That's how we've kind of managed how we've done other water projects by asking the applicant to proportion out that piece that goes to private. Oh, and so I'm still trying to figure that out. I mean, I need to sell it out to oil companies and irrigation companies and the power from that. But what public actually benefits as a result of this analysis?
Everybody needs to mark the obvious answer. A water system, you have, if you're delivering culinary water in a community and you're building a pipeline, it goes to businesses, it goes to residences, it goes to whoever's hooked up on the system. And I see what you're saying. We have not wanted to get into funding private companies themselves with the project, but the delivery of services is obviously authorized in the Act to the public. And this is what that is. It's delivering power to everybody that's on the system. And that's why it is a public project. That's why it is such an important public project. We're simply running out of power out there, and it's going to shut everything down. And that's not good for any of us.
You know, Tom kind of opened the door to what the responsibility is of the board member and of the coalition member. All I wanted to try to say was that the application went in with the intention of not trying to get any special consideration from the CIA board. That was all I was trying to say when I disclosed the numbers. You know, like I said, I'm not going to vote on the project. But another thing, the Claudia's point, when we funded the Victory Pipeline owns no water. They don't have any water rights. It's just transmission of water throughout that whole area. And if whoever owns the water rights decide to transport their water to and sell it to whoever they want to sell it. We didn't put any limitations on who owned the water or who are going to receive the water. It seems very similar to me on this transmission line, just to transport the electricity to whoever needs it, whether it's the commercial buyer or a residential buyer or whatever. I don't see that we have to know every detail about a transmission line any more than we had to know every detail about the Dixie pipeline.
I would just like to just kind of finalize one other thing. This has more to do with the disclosure side of things. I think with everybody here, but I just stated for myself because I know myself very well, very well. Honesty and integrity mean everything to me. And I will tell you, as a board member, I believe I'm representing in Utah, my county, the 6 county organization, and all involved that in my proposed project. I do not believe in any way that I'm violating any type of an ethics violation in doing so. I think I am acting in the best interest, and I have made those disclosures. And I think it would be rather disappointing to think that I'm not safe from this, because I do think that I'm trying to see what they have. I'm going to give a couple real quick examples. In Union County, when we built the county jail, we received $5 million grant, $5 million in human assets and interest, and $5 million in material from the south. I was supporting a project down in Van County today with much, much better terms than that. I was very supportive to Wayne County, a small little county that can't do anything on their own, 100% for granted. I feel like I am trying to be fair-minded across the state. But what I don't think I should do, and if you look at the rent motion, if you look at the money trying to extend the grant loans, you'll see we're on the lower side, not the upper side. But what I think that I should do is to the detriment of my own area, not get any support. That's something that I come from that area. So I would like to state that to the record.
Mr. Potter and Mr. Chair. In to that disclosure process that I consider my role in a state county coalition, when this came to come before us in the board, it doesn't always affect all of our counties. This is one of those projects that does not pertain to our county. And yet, as stated by Commissioner Key, I don't feel that there's an ethical issue there because, one, there are 6 of us on that board. If there was an issue in the field, we're not just going to support an even county because they're positive or whatever it might be. And so we have to stand on the first word of the application card, and then we can provide here. And the questions are excellent from the board as far as what they vote. But again, in that form of disclosure, this does not pertain to Carbon County. The organization of 6 County Coalition makes that up so that it would be a joint effort of bringing infrastructure to the state of Utah in a long-term view, enabling it to further the mineral production and then further the funding from the federal government, the state, and the individual counties. And there are increases in the quality of living because we want to go on and continue to pave roads to provide water systems. And even down to the splash pads, then we have to have the ability to produce minerals in this county or in this state of Utah. And it is a difficult position that Commissioner Winterson and he finds themselves in because right now that bulk is oil. But what happens in the economy if something turns and another commodity comes along? And I'm from a coal producing county, have been my whole life, and we've been producing coal for over 100 years. That kind of a commodity that has the ability to better life, not only for our own communities, our own citizens, and the worldwide market, why do we pretend that there isn't an opportunity for other things to come along that need to happen? Right now, there's oil and gas. We need the production out of there. We need that production in the state of Utah.
you take that away, and you've got considerable gap that not only did have a project, but a state attorney might find themselves in. And so, yes, we sometimes do wear multiple hats, and my attorney also has weighed in on that, and I do not have to side with him and say that it is not a personal ethical issue for myself. I am on to vote as a member of the CID in regards to that, having already heard the information from the superintendent level and having shared that information with my fellow commissioners. And so I think it goes well beyond just my role as a commissioner. It goes on up the road. So that's my side of the disclosure. Again, this is not a project that comes from Carver County.
All right. I think I can support this project, yes. Because of the concerns expressed by our treasurer, Richard Ellis, if before there is another request that comes before this board, we can have the business model, we can have the business plan, we can speed up the long range cost for them being held spending money. Then I think I can support it today. But with that caveat that before any more requests come in for the other 7 to 8 miles of this, that we have the complete picture, the complete business model, the complete business plan, that's just about the purpose of going in knowledge of what's going to be done in the future.
Okay,
Commissioner
Homer.
Can you discuss again why that's the need for a suspended fund as opposed to
or I guess that's because we do.
First, most importantly, is to address the needs of the public. We're short of power out there. So to address the need that we have to provide the power that's needed out there, we need to build this transmission line. The coalition has an opportunity right now to be able to use right away that we have available to us, that we can build this line and we can own it and we can deliver that power that we need to deliver out there to meet the shortage, to meet the needs that we have out there. That's the most pressing thing that we have out there, to be able to use the resources that we have with the substation, with the power that's available, with the rights of way that we have, and to be able to move that power through that corridor to get it out to those folks that need it. That simplifies it a little bit. Obviously, it's, you guys have hit on it very well, and the questions have been great. But really, that's the need, is that we have to address that need that we have out there, and this is the best way to do it.
Thank you. We have a motion.
Any
I
told you to throw myself into this, but just a couple questions. I think that's your job. A little bit about participating probably as much. There are a couple questions I'd like to ask because the concerns you raised about helping private industry and the business model be allowed to ask you those questions. Can you that? First off, I mean, do you have to get any approval from FERC to be engaged in transmitting electricity through the grid?
Our lines are not going to be crossing the state boundaries, and therefore I don't believe we have to go to FERC.
So even though you can't be in an interstate grid, you will be connected to the interstate grid, you're
I appreciate the question, and we'll double check that as we move forward.
Who are you selling the electricity to?
There are current electrical providers that we will be coordinating with. There also is the potential to be providing direct to retail users.
This coalition is
no
electricity
to individual
communities?
That is the plan.
You have to...
But not exclusively, let me be clear. That is the plan, but not exclusively.
You have to be regulated by anyone with regards
regards to being a public utility or providing electrical services to an individual?
Generally, when electricity is provided by a public body, they're considered a municipal electrical provider, and they are not regulated by the Public Service Commission. However, we are also double-checking that to make sure that that will be the case.
Would that be the case when you're not generating electricity from your
maintenance? Yeah, that is true. We will not be fully integrated.
And so, you're going to be building this line, right now you don't know who you're going to be selling to?
We have not entered into any contracts at this point, if that's your question.
In discussions with regards to use payer use, the chemical company would be contracting with the power companies for the ultimate beneficiaries, the Robert talked about us being getting electricity out of the field. So it would be selling to the some electricity or capacity to the electrical companies or to the energy development companies who are going to be using electricity. So that's not part of the plan?
No, it is. I'm not sure that that sounds more like a statement than a question.
But I understand. In terms of the question about the model and business, and you being able to enter into contracts to for people in hey, whether or not they provide or not for the contributing wrong. If you're talking about individual users, like farmers, irrigation people who want to electrify a farm.
Undoubtedly, before we're able to close on the loan, we will have to secure a stable repayment, and that will require contracts with users of the line. And yes, we will enter into those contracts, and those will be in place before we can close and obtain the funding.
Any questions about the team responsibilities to go to the we need power companies? We're going to our a lot of beneficiaries are going to power companies in terms of their ability to need more generation capacity.
Yeah, let me address that. I think I already mentioned that in brief, and so let me address that again. They're not all public projects. There are many different types of public projects that are public projects, some of which would qualify for tax-exempt funding under IRS regulations. The standard rule is if there is more than 10% of any one user of a public facility that is a private entity, that then calls into question whether they would qualify for tax-exempt funding. It still be a public project, but it would not necessarily qualify for tax-exempt funding. It has to be done on a taxable basis. And I do foresee where, at least initially, more than 10% will be involved in private entities, and therefore that's why I mentioned that with the motion, not only that it be suspended funds, but that it approve the loan on a taxable basis.
Our concern is with references to water systems or sewer systems for the public, anybody can approve. This board in the past turned down the sewer request in Kennedy County because the entity was requiring the need for additional sewer service happened to be a private entity we didn't want that. And so this board said that was acting on voters. Government money to benefit the private entity, which this board's rules prohibit.
Sure.
So I think that in turn, it ought to be addressed by you to make sure that this is not passed through of this cheap money to either the power company or any other entity out there that maybe should be providing the service or paying for as Commissioner Garrett alluded to earlier.
I agree. There's ways to do it wrong. We'll make sure we do it right.
Thank you.
At the Broome Airport, for example, the airline counter,
rental cars. There may be minor concessions. I'm not sure there'd be too much. In that instance, it was essentially a half grant, half loan. And if the loan portion involved that private use, it would now be done on a taxable basis. In that instance, that was able to be skirted because there was a half grant, and the private portion doesn't exceed 50%, and so the grant portion can be allocated to where that private use is. There's no question that the airport terminal is a public facility for a public service, despite the private involvement. Okay. And so that's kind of what we're dealing with here as well. If you wanted to give more grants so we didn't have to wrestle with that, that would be nice. But that's not the way the application was put together. There may be some basis on which this could be done as a private activity bond. On a tax-exempt basis, we have to go before the board to ask an allocation on the state board. That being a competition with industrial revenue bonds and housing bonds and things like that. Yeah, the downside would be this, is if the community impact board did not hold the loan for its entire life and went to sell it, already 2.5% would be a below market rate, and so you'd have to sell it at a discount, but if it was on a taxable basis, that discount would be even larger.
Commissioner, that's a good question. That reinforces my view of it.
Any other discussion on the vote? So, we're going to bring this attachment on the motion tonight. That would be the question. So, what's the thought?
Yeah, even at that point, I have yet to understand the utility of doing that.
Can I ask you just to speak to you? We've already voted on this, and I don't want to mess up the process. I'm wondering if there's an appetite to look at that under taxable. If it's a done deal, if you see, Jim, would you be open to see how the board would feel on making it taxable? Or?
That's way above my pay grade as far as process, but I'm sure we wouldn't take a look at the confirmation of that.
If it would be not out of order, I would.
We're going to come back and report to our board again, so we can discuss that with more detail as they come back for us.
This is a conflict. Loans made by the Community Impact Board that were closed on a taxable basis. The one that leaps to my mind most prominently was for the airport down in Cedar City, approximately 2004 is when that loan was made. And it was for the very reasons that I explained with respect to the Vernon Airport as well, just because of the private involvement, so that was done on a taxable basis. And if there have been some others over the years, I have to be into my notes to
get the as far as the idea is concerned, if there's no intention to discuss or pat on the note, you wouldn't have to answer that question.
It makes no difference. Okay, so the interest income that the Community Impact Board earns in the state of Utah isn't taxable anyway. And so even though most of the loans you make are issued on a tax-exempt basis, it doesn't change the amount of money that you get, okay? It only makes a difference if you
ever sell those off in the open market.
I want you to understand, you know, this would be that there's a need for that.
There is a strategy, of course. There's a need.
Is there a need for that?
Yes. To make a cash flow, if you're willing to, that be part of your motion.
No, my question is, there is there a need to make this set up for paper sale?
I don't believe there is, but I would defer to our people. I don't believe there's any need to make this sale.
Can you ask the state treasurer how often they actually sell foreign individuals?
We've done it with some of the larger programs to recapitalize their funds, but not this particular program. I don't see that happening. It takes legislative authorization, and with $800 billion, there's a lot of loans to choose from, or maybe it's more than that now. I don't think the tax exemption is any issue at all to our board. What it does is take all of the IRS strings that come with tax exemption and remove them so that they have flexibility and really can do about whatever they need to make the project go. With those IRS strings on there, then it really ties their hands behind their back with one foot hooked in there that will make it extremely difficult. So it just doesn't matter to us, I don't think.
So if you give us that deal to close that, we'll make this project easier.
Thank you.